This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
From Churchill Downs, Friday, the end of the week before Derby week, and a very good morning, everybody. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebeck.com. And happy to wrap up this first week, which went by like a complete runaway train, I think, is probably the best description. And things really kick off in earnest tomorrow with the opening evening of action at Churchill Downs. Then a little respite, and they'll get ready to draw the weekend fields. And then once that happens on Monday, off we go. And everybody starts to get really serious about Oaks and Derby weekend ahead. Drizzly morning here. The rain, as expected, came in. Supposed to end early this afternoon. And so that'll make things perfect probably for Saturday. A lot of the works that, you know, were being sort of watched and being scheduled, pretty much everybody expected that today was going to be wet and not nice. So a week out, I mean, most of the serious works, not most, all of the serious works are done. There might be you know, certain horses that are asked for a little bit more in their final works. Tomorrow will be a very busy morning here. We'll catch up maybe with Mike Welch, who had a quiet morning, and we didn't get a chance to talk to Mike yesterday about the filly works, and there were a handful of them, and most notably probably the Cox fillies got the most attention, deservedly, and I don't mean just wet paint, right? Botanical as well, and we also noted, I thought, Brendan Walsh, who, with Keeneland wrapping up today, Brendan Walsh on an absolute steamer last week, and he's been down at the sale. We'll give you some sale results at some point during the hour. I hope to reach Tom Ventura for a quick hit with the last day of the OBS sale. $2.2 million Gunrunner yesterday that went again to Amr Zidane, who has now bought the top knockdown each of the 3 days of the sale. $2.2 million for the Gunrunner. $1,450,000 for the Arrogate Colt on day one, and then on Wednesday, $900,000 for the Frosted Colt. So Amr Zidane and Donato Lanny and Baffert gearing up for the two-year-old season. Zidane is going to continue his assault on getting a Derby win that doesn't get disqualified out from under him. With that as a backdrop, I am looking forward to getting Brendan, because Pretty Mischievous looks terrific out there on the filly side, and he begged off earlier this week. He said, I'm going to be at the sale, and I'm tied in there. There's all kinds of tidbits I've got to get to as the morning unfolds, and of course yesterday the biggest story was a tragedy. I don't know how else to phrase it. The sadness associated with what transpired with Wild on Ice and Joel Marr and Frank Sumter. Sumter, Scott Shapiro joining me, by the way. Sumter, as stoic about what transpired as an owner breeder is going to be. And his comments are actually pretty fascinating, and obviously a guy that's devout and carries a lot of faith with him, and he just couldn't have been more effusive in expressing his appreciation for having a horse like Wild on Ice. I mean, that was his overriding message, and as sad as everything was, that was, I thought, pretty uplifting. In the meantime, for CRK, for the Searings, and for John Sheriff, And for Skinner, the opportunity to run in the Derby a week from tomorrow. And one slight surprise, modest surprise, Juan Hernandez picks up the mount as opposed to Victor Espinoza coming with the horse. And certainly Juan Hernandez, there'll be his first Derby. So we've got one of those storylines to consider here as we move toward Derby. And let me move toward welcoming in Scott Shapiro. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Great to be here. 8 days to the Derby, seven to the Oaks. Like you mentioned, a little bit of a slower day than yesterday, particularly with the Oaks horses, and tomorrow where it'll be, like you said, a lot of Derby action. The heavy lifting for most of these horses, if not all of them, has been done. But the final preparations and then opening night. So racing returning here to historic Churchill Downs, which with a 10-race card to kick off the meet as always.
Well, and there is even a little bit of a flavor of Triple Crown in the air, because today out of Pimlico, you've got the start of the first opportunity to bet a Preakness future. If you didn't see the press release and the details and the odds from Keith Fustel, this will be interesting, because people are going to have to speculate, first of all, who might even come out of Derby and go forward, and then you got horses that are pointing toward Preakness that are going to bypass here, like Blazing Sevens, who's 50-1 on Keith's line to get started, for instance. Then what about First Mission, 15-1?
Ooh,
right. I mean, that's going to come down. He'll get bet, right?
I mean, he's going to get bet by me at anywhere near
there
that
you go.
Price. Yeah, no, I think it's a tremendous idea. You know, the more future wagers, the more people start talking about these races earlier, the better, in my opinion. Love when we draw these big cards early, and I just think it does nothing negative and all the positive. And, you know, like you said, this is a good opportunity, I think, Steve, to bet on horses that if you think they have a chance in the second leg of the Triple Crown before the Kentucky Derby, because, you know, let's face it, regardless of how the Derby goes, whether it's a six-horse blanket finish or a dominating effort, there's going to be a lot of horses that are quote-unquote exposed to an extent that aren't going to, you know, that are going to drop significantly in odds, because we saw what they did in the Derby, are going to bypass the Derby. So First Mission's the horse I'm interested in. You mentioned Blazing Sevens. Chad Brown has pulled this off before, but great idea. Love to see more of this.
There you go. So watch for the Preakness future wager on your menu, and I'm going to assume it closes Sunday at 6. It does. Sunday at 6. Or actually, take that back. It's closing Saturday. It's closing tomorrow.
Yeah, it's quickie, which is a little tough.
Oh, actually, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
It opens.
It's closing next Saturday. That's interesting.
It opens Sunday, maybe?
It opens, gets underway Friday.
Oh, so it's 8 days?
Yeah, okay. This is very interesting. So there's developments. You can actually, there's no reason to bet this really until you watch for some further developments.
Yeah.
There's no reason to jump in immediately. But I saw the 6 p.m., but then I saw May 6th. So it's going to be open until an hour before Derby goes off.
That's great. So it's still the same concept. You're
wow.
betting before knowing what happened in the Kentucky Derby. But like you mentioned, no real rush to get your wager in, because, you know, wait to see what happens. Maybe there's defections,
yeah,
et cetera,
exactly,
in the Derby that would
How
lead you,
that?
You know, to different opinions.
How about that? All right. Well, and I didn't say who they made the favorite, but
Forte, right?
4-1. Toppit Trice, 6-1. All other 3-year-olds, 8-1, in case you get somebody that,
you can have
jumps
that one.
In. Dermis Odagaki, 10-1. Practical Move, 10-1. Angel of Empire, 12-1. Kings Barnes, 15-1. Verifying, 15-1. First Mission, 15. Skinner, 20. Mandarin Hero, 20. Mage, 30. Hit Show, 30. Disarm, 35. Two Fills, 40. Instant Coffee, who Brad Cox told us is pointed most likely that way, 50-1. Red Route 1, 50-1. He is intended, although Asmussen hasn't committed. Reincarnate, 50-1. Cyclone Mischief, 50. Coincidence Game, 50. Blazing Sevens, 50. Rocket Can, 50. Lord Miles, 60. Raise Cane, 60. Sun Thunder, 60. Jace's Road, 60. Continue Our, 70. And Chase the Chaos, the Ed Mojer actually is running this weekend at
San Francisco.
San Francisco, yeah. And 99-1. He's got a free pass if he wants to participate. So there's your odds in Preakness Future.
I think it's going to be, you know, it's always a good Preakness. I don't mean to say that it isn't, but having a couple of horses, significant horses, kind of waiting for the Preakness helps the field, regardless of what happens in the Derby, which horses end up going on and which horses don't. I think that adds intrigue to it, knowing that the couple of Brad Cox runners and Blazing Sevens, at the very least, are sitting there waiting.
Let's talk a little bit about the weekend. And you, by the way, I wasn't going to do it today. I'll save it for probably Monday, because there won't be a ton to of racing. There's a decent amount of racing to recap, but the winner of the leaderboard, and you nice enough to reach out, and Andrew Jahan from Glendale. And even though he's not coming, able to come to claim his prize to at least the trip portion, we're going to have him on. I'm
that's
looking
awesome.
Forward to it. All right,
yeah, that's great.
Andrew
that's
Jahan,
great.
Congratulations again.
Yeah, no, he lapped. I don't know, maybe lapped the field stretching it, but a very impressive effort.
Job.
Yeah, and we're going to have the runner-up to the contest on either on Thursday or Friday. So thanks to everybody that contributed, that got involved, and what you and I always speak of as one of our favorite things done of the many on Twin Spires in terms of promotions.
Let's. We're going to talk to James, by the way, in hour two. With James, we will do the requisite conversation we always have the Friday before Oaks Derby. He's going to go through the format of the Brisnet PPs for those that, you know, because they're widely accessible and free out there for everybody. And James will walk you through later what, you know, what some of the symbols mean, the early, the presser, the closers, that part of the PPs, also the pace, what the pace figures represent, and you know what he uses, the prime power number. James does this every year, and it's always well-received for people who are somewhere along the line have come to use Brisnet PPs, and it
awesome.
Takes a little bit of, yeah, it takes a little bit of familiarity to get the lay of the land. Let's talk a little bit about the weekend, and you got anything at Keeneland today before we...
I do not. I do not. I wasn't able to get to it. I knew it was going to rain, and obviously being here more often than not so far this week, I skipped over today's card at Keeneland. But pick six carryover there, definitely worth getting involved in. Probably going to be an off track, I would assume, to an extent, but we'll see how that plays out. But for me, it was starting tomorrow and working, obviously, on the big races and whatnot.
You mentioned the care, $52,000 on that pick six, and that's the dollar pick six. And, of course, last weekend you had a big, you know, several days of carryover, which we had never experienced. And then there's also, you know, the super high five. Anything, everything has got to be paid out. So anything that has carryover provisions is a force out, of course, today by the end of the card, which actually is a race that we looked at yesterday with Jeff Franklin on the win using Thorograph segments that we're doing. We looked at that 10th race, and it's a good one. I'm going to assume they'll run on the grass today.
You would think,
reason.
Right. I don't think it was that much rain that it would be unsafe.
No.
We'll see how it plays out. But those are great segments. Obviously, as a Thorograph user, really appreciate them. I started them, what, about a month ago or so, and you've been doing them regularly,
yeah,
right?
We do them every Thursday in the third hour, and Crafty, as his oldest racetrack friends know him, Crafty Franklin.
That's a good nickname to have,
Crafty. Yeah, I'm gonna force him to explain where the Crafty, the origins of Crafty, come from. And he's as, you know, he's as accomplished a Thorograph user as a jock agent in those capacities, and you know the jocks, that's actually always a fun conversation, because the jocks use several, there's several systems of horse evaluation that the jock agents, you know, there's that thorough
manager, a lot of them use.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Should that actually be a fun conversation to have. Let's then dive into whatever, you know, wherever you landed.
Well, we've got the opening night card tomorrow. 10 races, as I said. You know, the earlier races, a little bit of the lower level stuff, a couple low level maiden claimers, an open $16,000 event, an N2L, but things get into the allowance maiden special weight stakes races starting in race 5, which will kick off the first Derby City 6 of the year of the meet of everything. and it's a pretty good maiden special weight race for three-year-olds and up. I thought there were a couple of intriguing firsters in here, a second-time starter in number four, Mapper. It's a race where I thought the number seven Sidekick at 5-2 on the line might be a little bit vulnerable. Is a very well-bred Son of Honor Code out of the dam, reunited, was in the Shug McGahee barn as a three-year-old, four chances, lost as the favorite twice. I ended up landing on number five, Shady Daredevil, first-time starter for Norm Cassie, of course, based on the name, not surprising. This is a Son of Daredevil. The dam, Shady Violence, unfortunately, after one start, it was a good one here for Norm back in 2018, where she finished second. Never raced again, fractured sesamoid. But this is her first foal, and Norm very capable with first-time starters. I think Shady Daredevil looks live at first asking, as does Time to Make Mischief, a firster for Dallas Stewart, who's gotten significantly better with firsters over the years. In fact, over his last 116 starts with three-year-old firsters at the special weight level, he's got a 239 ROI, and attracting Tyler Gaffalione leads me to believe that this one is live. So I like those two. I like Mapper, who outran his odds and just missed on debut at Gulfstream, makes his second career start for Rusty Arnold, but Shady Daredevil on top.
So five, six, and a little four.
Yeah, five with four, six, basically. Yep.
All right.
The sixth is the return to the sod here at Turfway. All reports is everything is looking good out there. They've worked several horses over the turf course. Very much looking forward to getting back to it on the turf course here. And this is a race that goes definitely through number one, Chasing the Crown, who is 7-5 on the line. If I'm trying to poke holes in this horse, the lone win did come back a little bit after Derby Day last year over a course that favored, if we remember, the outside part of the turf course that time of the year. Took advantage of that, but the two races at Gulfstream are just better than anything I've seen from anybody else in this field. It lost to Up to the Mark, who is a obviously highly regarded Todd Pletcher horse that tried the Grade 1 foes at Keeneland in the Maker's Mark Mile, but looks like Chasing the Crown, potential single for me and a lot of people in the sixth.
Very good.
On to the seventh, which I presume will be using the starting gate, the Kentucky Derby starting gate, getting a little try since it's a mile and a quarter race. And it's fillies and mares, three-year-olds and up, going that classic mile and a quarter distance over the main track. And I think peak popularity will go off the favorite here, 8-5 on the line. No real knocks on this daughter of Mendelssohn other than that she did lose at 4-5 last time. Now, she didn't get out of the gate well and raced against the flow of the race that day and did show some life. But I do prefer a couple others that'll be a little bit of a better price. I pick Corsini, a daughter of Hardspun, Godolphin homebred for the aforementioned Brendan Walsh coming in on a heater. He gets his main man Tyler Gaffalione up. I think this horse will have no problem. Will actually like the added ground. I also think that it would be the case of Raggedy Sand, who ran two good races in New Orleans for Neil Pessin, and comes in off a second-place effort to Newbeat, who wired out the field on one of the undercard races on the Louisiana Derby card. And then I think Medaglia Forever is the other horse I like. I don't know if we'll get 8-1 on this horse, but the Dam Forever Unbridled, of course, the 2017 Breeders' Cup Distaff winner for Dallas Stewart. The sire, Medaglia d'Oro, this horse ran a good second at Gulfstream when hammered down to favoritism and then didn't run all that well against stakes foes in the Bourbonnet Oaks at Turfway, but now gets a little bit of a class drop, to say the least, dropping back into the maiden special weight ranks.
Get you to the second half and the late pick three, second level allowance, turf sprint, the Roxalana, where Frank's Roquette will be a very short price, but doesn't necessarily seem invincible. And then a maiden 30 closes it out at about 10:45 Saturday night.
Yeah, and I thought that maybe we could beat the two morning line favorites in this eighth race. That's 2-1 favorites. Parents Pride comes in off two wins for Safi Joseph Jr. Safi 0-8 at Keeneland and just 14% at Churchill, and I say just because overall he's a high percentage, much higher percentage trainer throughout. The last win was over the all-weather, the one before that over the dirt, so the turf a little bit of a question mark. And then Nota Bene, who ran a good second to Her World, who wired out the field at Keeneland in a second-level allowance event on April 7th in the Lexington area. But she's just 2-16 over 3 over this course. I think number 3, Quick Money, is one of my top plays of the day. Chris Hartman continuing to run races in bunches throughout the country, particularly in Hot Springs, gets this daughter of Munning's first career start. three back last time she raced over the sod. I thought it was a visually impressive effort over the Ellis turf course. Gets Ray Gutierrez, I think, will sit a perfect stalking trip. Like that one quite a bit. And I think Frozen Solid's a little bit intriguing at 10-1 on the line for Brian Lynch. Second start of the form cycle. Could have run better in the first start off a brief freshening at Keeneland, but Brian, really good numbers over the years at Churchill. 302 start sample size, 244 ROI, and 10-1, pretty attractive.
Yeah, very much. All right. Are we? Is there beating Frank's Roquette?
Well, I mean, it's one of those situations where you know she's the likeliest winner. I mean, her last two efforts at Gulfstream have been dominant now. The Hurricane Birdie, she won by 8 lengths. She beat someone convincingly in the start before that that's in this field in the Sugar Swirl. But that was at Gulfstream. Things happen a little bit differently here at Churchill than they do there. And while she is 2-for-4 over this course with 2/3, some of her more recent efforts, particularly you see the Dream Supreme within the last 10 races, one of her slower recent races. So drawing the rail and knowing that her price is going to be very short, a very common single, I do think maybe worth looking at other options. And the option that I'm intrigued by is Capellia, the 6-horse in here. And I think she's going to be higher than that 3-to-1 price because she just got drilled by Frank's Roquette, like I said, in the Grade 3 Sugar Swirl. But prior to that, she ran a huge race in the Dream Supreme here, besting Joyful Cadence in Wisconsin by almost 3 lengths, career best triple-digit 100 Brisnet speed rating. And you just have to be hopeful that she didn't really like it at Gulfstream like she does here in Kentucky. And she does get Tyler Gaffalione up for the first time. So expecting a little bit of a better than a 3-to-1 morning line, or the 3-to-1 morning line price with Capellia. And Pretty Birdie is going to take some catching, Steve. This horse has not quite developed from those really fast races earlier on in her career for Norm Cassie, where she won the Schuylerville, won the Purple Mountain, but she is still very fast and very capable of stealing it on the front end if Luis Saez can dictate terms. But I'm going to take a chance here with Capellia, who I think will be maybe the third choice when all said and done, second choice on the morning line.
Very good. And the Nightcap?
Yeah, the Nightcap is a race where I'm going to go with a little bit of a price in here in number 9, Booster Shot. I think the 5, Tiz 2020, might get a little bit overbetting here with Luis Saez riding for Whitey Michael McCarthy. This is a horse that has only raced once, and it was last year. One start at the special weight level, one turn mile race, set the early terms, tired badly. Hasn't been seen since, now drops in for 30. It's a homebred for Pamela Zyberth, but you know, this is a pretty well-bred horse to just give one star to. So I think there might be a little pace. I'm going to look to number 9, Booster Shot, as the top pick in here. Ships in from Fairgrounds for Al Stahl. Little went right when he dropped in for a tag for the first time back on March 9th. It was also his first start at 2 turns. Had some trouble in there as the 9-to-5 favorite. They ran 1-2 around the track. He was off the pace. I think an outside draw will have him in the clear. I think Ray Gutierrez will have him a little bit more into the race. I think Booster Shot's got a shot to spring the upset in the finale.
Well, that'll finish it with a flourish, and we get underway for those that are coming this way for opening night at Churchill. Is there a theme for the Dawns After Dark?
I don't think there's an opening. Usually the Downs After Dark cards, but technically by definition,
opening night.
Yeah, it's not a Downs All After right. Dark, so it right. Keeps me from having, you know, one extra outfit to think about for this.
Something crazy. Before we go, and to give everybody a quick survey, Nick Tamaro is going to join us next, and Jay Privman at the top
nice.
Of the hour. Jay winning, even retired. Jay is garnering awards. He was named the David Woods winner by the MJC yesterday, and his third, actually, which is
awesome.
Coverage of the Preakness, a piece he did on Dwayne Lucas last year. But we'll talk about the Hall of Fame with Jay, and we'll get his latest Derby thoughts as well. Scully is mentioned in hour two. CJ Milkowski, Timeform US, of course, Timeform U.S. Figs, and CJ will talk about his pace projections, which have been tweaked, and he basically has been tracking all through the winter and spring. And then Hammer in hour three, we might slip in another visit or two, possibly Tommy Ventura, seeing about, you know, Laurel, situation at Laurel, they're getting the rain They'll be getting the rain now that we have here, that we've had here. That's coming next to the Mid-Atlantic. And right now they're scheduled to run that card tomorrow. And, you know, the question becomes about turf. And to me it seems still up in the air, even though Passero gave, you know, the go-ahead that, you know, the track just needs, you know, just some careful tweaking and monitoring. There is the stakes from last weekend that have been rescheduled for tomorrow at Laurel. And there's actually a couple of variants. There's actually particularly the Dahlia, I thought, came up entertaining. And counting on Hammer to give us some coverage on Golden Gate, which has got their
good
big
racing,
their big card, which includes the San Francisco Mile, the Cal Derby, the Cal Oaks, the Golden Poppy, the Lost in the Fog, who we loved.
Oh, man, what a horse.
No, he was unbelievable. Another sad story. Somebody was running the on Twitter. Somebody pulled up the Harry Aleo, the ESPN clip. Have you remember this?
I don't think I'm familiar.
It's the greatest. It's the absolute greatest.
I'll have to check it out.
When he was asked pre-race to compare his experience at the Battle of the Bulge with owning Lost in the Fog, and Harry was not the right guy to be asking the kind of silly questions, and Harry's response was priceless.
I'll have to try to pull that up.
You'll remember once you see it. You'll
okay.
remember it. Yeah,
okay.
That was making the rounds the other day, there we go. So there it is. Your any new Derby thoughts, Oaks thoughts that have morphed over the week?
Well, in terms of the Derby, I just, you know, from when we spoke about it last, that, you know, for a while there, it looked like the pace of the race might be a little bit moderate, pokey.
Yeah.
I'm starting to get the feel, couple of the, you know, recent things with Jace's Road drawing in, obviously Cyclone Mischief, the next one in, if anybody else should defect, I think that obviously changes the way the race can be played with Rocket Ken adding the blinkers. I don't know if he's a horse that's going to, you know, run off with the blinkers like we've seen in past, but maybe a little more prominent. You've got the horses we've talked about, King's Barnes, Verifying, along with Jace's Road, a stablemate that are going to be involved early. And then I'm getting the feeling more and more that Reincarnate, you know, it just hasn't worked out as planned. We've seen Johnny V get aggressive with these Southern California horses in the past in the Derby. Maybe he goes. So I'm going to look to horses in the mid-pack type more so than I thought I would. And at the moment, I'm just loving what I'm seeing, watching things back, the development of Angel of Empire. That's where I'm at the moment, where with 8 days out, we've got these final works. And with the Oaks, I'm sticking with South Lawn. I mean, she's flying under the radar a little bit with the Brad Cox contingent, getting most of the attention, like you said yesterday, with the Oaks. I think South Lawn is an improving filly, and I think it's time for Norm to get that first big grade one, and what a big grade one it would be.
Very much so. She's intriguing. Agreed. Shap, I appreciate it. We'll let you get home. You've been here since the crack of dawn. Who are the guests lined up for next week? Tomorrow and Sunday?
Yeah, tomorrow, Rosina Pravnik. If you didn't see it today yet, catch that on Rewind, YouTube, social media. She'll be back again tomorrow. She'll also be back on Sunday. And then Thursday, Brandon Staubel will join us. He's been on the program regularly years before,
sure,
just Saturday and Sunday. And then your man, my man, James Scully, will be joining us on Monday for a few appearances, and he'll be joining us on the simulcast, us being Joe Christofek, Caitlin Free, and myself.
There you go, and the YouTube channel streaming all over the place, streaming right off of
you can't
Twitter
find
too.
It, you're probably not finding this show, so, all right.
You can always, and, you know, if you're not able to watch 7 to 8 live, it's available.
Yes.
You know, at your convenience.
Exactly.
And you can catch up on, you know, several days. Obviously, today a lot of conversation and review from yesterday.
Rosie got to review a lot of the Oaks work, so if you want to hear Rosie's thoughts on the Oaks workers, it would be a good chance, but a more mellow morning than yesterday and a lot more mellow than tomorrow will be.
Well, she did do, utilizing the tape from Hawthorne of two fills. And
yes.
If you didn't see, that's the last thing I wanted was a fabulous work from two fills, because we're all over him, and he just, you know what's, it's funny, the camera, the first video came from Jim Miller.
Right.
And then came the actual video that their TV department had produced. And if I can steal a line from Gary Young, Jareth Loveberry looks like a fly on a Dalmatian. on two fills. I mean, he is big and rangy. Very good work.
No, he's one of the more intriguing middle price long shots, depending where what you want to call him. But I know the work was good. But if you're someone backing two fills, I think that him not being here will benefit the price a little bit.
I hope so. Good. Thank you. I'll take it.
Just a little. A little.
It's funny how it works sometimes with you latch on to a Derby horse early in the season, and you think, if that horse gets there, I'm good. And then, there's some travails and this, and then, the win. It's funny, for a horse that's got a win at a mile and an eighth and a win at the racetrack, he's not a mojo horse,
right.
It seems, by any means. But I just kept, it's one of those horses that I just... I was impressed with right from early on, and going back to last fall, and you store that away, and you don't know if these 2-year-olds are going to become 3-year-olds, and what is there not to like about his style? He's got all the I don't want to utilize all the trite sayings. he checks all the boxes, but he does. He's tactical. He can adjust the paces. He's going to be forward. And if he gets shuffled back, he's a horse that that can bring himself into the race when he needs to or wants to. What's unappealing?
We've seen the trip that Two Fills is likely to get, win the Derby a lot. Did you get in on any of the future wagers with them or no?
I did, actually. Now that
big,
you say that.
Some big prices, I think.
It's funny.
Yeah,
I'm glad you said that. I've got the sheets. In fact, I'll have that all. I'll collate that over the weekend for everybody.
We've got two fills at 91-1 in pool 3, which was 15 weeks out.
Right.
95-1 in pool 4. 88-1 in pool 5. So the belief was... for some reason, maybe Barn, maybe because he didn't win these races.
Yeah,
he ran second and third,
exactly.
But he had a troubled trip. If you're looking at that first ever race here at Churchill, it was a live 2-year-old race. You can toss that race. He won over the off-going in the street sense. He ran, he made a move too early in both the Risen Star and the LeComp, but was competitive. Lots to like.
Yeah, and you get Ravelli. I mean, you get one of the great characters in the game.
Yeah, we'll have him on the show next week, interviewed one of the days as one of the interviewers.
You may need a mute button. FYI. Scott Shapiro, everybody. Scott Schapp. 34.
34, the old street address.
On your Twitter, Scott Shapiro. Thanks. I'll talk to you, and we'll have the big, the big... serious work next week.
Sounds good, Steve.
In fact, by the way, I did tell Kevin Kilroy we're going to try to reprise, you and Kilroy and Christofek. Maybe one of the mornings that works.
Yeah, we'll try to figure that out in advance. Probably would have to be before the two big days. But, try to do it.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Sounds good.
All right, there we go. Scott Shapiro with some ideas. And thank you, buddy. I appreciate it. Let's get Nick Tamaro in here and catch up with some of Nick's thoughts. And, of course, not that we need to start every conversation with Nick. Oh, for goodness sakes, I just hung up on him. Not that we need to start every conversation. I'm gonna wait till I get Nick on the line. Nick, I was saying that not that we need to have every visit with you start the same way by talking about trolls on Twitter. But another wacky set of hijinks this week.
It's endless at this point. I guess it means you've made it, right? When that many people have to take a shot or whatever, shots are fine, but to do it behind this veil of secrecy is a little fun. So,
yeah.
Oh well.
What's important is, have they said you're bad for the game yet?
Not yet. I mean, you know, even as dumb as some of it might get, if you say that somebody like me is bad for the game, that might be. It's like somebody has anybody ever said that to you?
Andy and I, we're bad for the game. We're bad for the game.
Yeah, well, that's awfully tough to take. I mean, a guy that does 800 hours a year of radio is really bad for the game.
It is comical. Before we talk any action, Keeneland wraps up, and you've done a terrific job in big fields in volatile market. Essentially, I mean, it's an unusual. It's an unusual place, Keeneland. I mean, no matter how many seasons go by, it always feels like, you know, you have to constantly re-examine what you see there.
Yeah, you're right. That's well put. It's a challenging place, no doubt about it. And in the spring, you get horses converging from all different places, and so it's hard to really get a gauge on what exactly is going to happen. And so you're kind of always sort of chasing it in a way, so to speak, not necessarily from the gambling parlance, but you're always looking to see, you know, which circuit is more live than the other and who's doing better than who's not and so on and so forth. So yeah, it's very challenging. Today's card has a pick six carryover to close out the meet. And I think punters will be happy to see Warlike Goddess, who will help them get through the sequence a little bit easier. And you know, it's good to have it on the way out. I enjoyed the meet, of course, and was glad to make a trip up there, and we're looking forward to the fall.
Any opinions that could help people today with the force out and.
You know, I know that she's going to garner a lot of attention late. Obviously, that's going to be, you know, the focus of probably quite a few tickets. The ninth race, so, I mean, Bill Mott really holds the key to the sequence because he's going to have Warlike Goddess, who I made 3-5 on the morning line. And then in the following race, he's going to have a horse called A La Carte breaking from the rail, who's 4-5. And, you know, Mott tanked with a couple of short-priced horses with IRAD last week. This horse was a maiden winner last out. I mean, he wasn't unbelievably impressive. He just really towers over this field on paper. So he's going to be pretty tough based on those two performances. And I think having the inside draw hopefully prompts IRAD to just do the right thing, which is to go to the lead and try and establish a forward position and try and take the field wire to wire. I think that'll help quite a bit. There's another relatively short-priced favorite in the seventh race in the three Castle Warden for Brad Cox. I don't know if this horse necessarily has to win. I'm interested in Bad Boy Frank, second-time starter for Ian Wilkes, who's quietly had a very, very strong meet. So I'm going to try and work him into my tickets for sure, and I think that'll potentially provide a little bit of value. The Nightcap is a good one other than with a very competitive field. Turf King for Chad Brown should be a pretty solid favorite after breaking his maiden first time out at 8-1. Everybody's going to jump back on board here. And I think a lot of people will end the sequence that way. I think Laver is interesting. The half-brother of Navratilova out of the Grade 1 winning Mare Center Court. This is a Bernardini, though, probably part of the reason why he hasn't taken to turf quite as well, but he did just have two opportunities as a two-year-old. Dunedin is in there for Kelsey Danner going
along
for the second time. Yeah, I like that horse as well, so I think that one's very dangerous.
5-1. And we should mention, before we talk any Derby-type things and so forth, there is the last two-year-old race of the meet goes as the second. This is a turfer, and I assume they'll run the things, everything on the turf. The horse to at least be aware of in terms of sibling, the two. Beyond Oscar, this an Oscar performance out of the Ocean Crest Mare Beyond the Waves, making this filly a half to Bricks and Mortar.
Yeah, I saw that, and doing the work the other night, making the morning line, and was like, wow, I didn't expect to see that.
Right.
Couple of other winners on the dam side too. Emerald Beach was a grade three winner for Jonathan Shepard. Yeah. And I actually had no idea that Seth Klarman stole bricks and mortar away from an Augustan family. So it was very surprising that that George Strawbridge ended up selling bricks and mortar. And of course, he ended up going on to be a horse of the year. Yeah, this is an interesting race. There's also another pedigree in here that's not quite as robust, but the Fausto Gutierrez first, or who was out of left a message that was a Glen Hill mare. This is a horse who sold very cheaply at auction. The interesting thing about this race, Steve, is that Wesley Warthorse is going to be the favorite from the rail, but she's a gun runner, and gun runner, for as great as he's been as a stallion, has two turf debut winners. So he has not been nearly as productive on turf. I generally don't find these races all that interesting from a wagering perspective. But if you're trying to get through here in a multi-race play, I wouldn't just assume that that this horse is going to take to the turf. Now, the dam side, as you go deeper, is loaded with turf pedigree. The second dam was Social Queen, who Alan Goldberg trained for Rich Santulli, who was a grade three winner on the turf, multiple grade three winner. So there's plenty of turf pedigree back in the second family. I believe Social Queen produced the winner of the Belmont Oaks as well that Santulli owned. So yeah, there's a little pedigree there in the second family. But again, I mean, it's a gun runner that they paid $700K for. Not certain they were planning on going to the turf, but maybe turf and then ask it.
Well, and we'll wait for later in the morning to see if there's any further turf questions. There is that first World of Trouble too. She's a baddie for Whit Beckman and the team at Legion Bloodstock, who we root for. And I see the Del Mar group has got another runner, an American Pharaoh out of a big brown mare. This one should take the turf. American Tsunami. So this is kind of interesting that usually these two-year-old races in April are not ripe with pedigree strength and sibling strength, but this is a good meet ender at Keeneland, and the two-year-old racing's been good, off to a good start, and of course Wesley a huge part of it. He struck early and often. All right, Nick, before we talk maybe a little cross-country pick five, and there's actually some interesting things going on at Oaklawn tomorrow, including a maiden race that starts the card for old, you know, three-year-olds and so forth that I want to bring up. But any developments catch your eye leading up to next week?
Nothing substantial. I've watched some of the workouts and certainly have read some of the opinions of the people who I've learned to trust over the years. And I can say that I don't feel like I like a horse that didn't train well. You know, I will admit that as time has gone by, I really find myself warming up to Two Phils, who, going back through and watching his replays, I was doing a contender profile for InTheMoneyPodcast.com. And I went back and watched all of his replays again. Obviously, I watched all these races multiple times, but you know, focusing on him, he really hasn't run a bad race. And that includes what looks like a ho-hum effort in the Breeders' Futurity, where he was kind of always within range of that pace and was kind of a casualty of that. So he's a horse, I think, who's probably going to be, he's going to represent real value in this field. And I think value, of course, is subjective, and the term is used loosely and flippantly by a lot of people that don't understand it. But to me, he's value at 15 to 1 or so. And I'm going to use him and Tappet Trice and Dermisotagake. And if I lose, then that's fine. I'm not going to pull what hair I have left out like I did at the end of last year's Derby and swear off betting it again. But those are my three as of right now. I don't see much changing. And I'm interested in seeing how the weekend goes and whoever ends up posting a final workout, with the main piece of work, I think, already being done. I'm intrigued to see how they perform.
People, there were a couple of funny comments yesterday as we were tracking Two Phils' workout at Hawthorne. And I latched on early and just don't see a reason not to be enthused about him. you know, he's one of the horses that no matter what happens with the leaders, that he'll adjust. He can come from the middle of the pack. He can stalk up close. He can, you know, he's versatile that way. And I'm all in too. And I don't know what to do about Dermisoda Gaki. Yesterday I laid out. Somebody asked me, you know, where I was, and I gave it in order two fills, Tappet Trice, Skinner, and Angel of Empire. And barring anything, you know, anything happening that would you know, force my hand, that's where I am. And I imagine I will figure out a way to utilize Dermisoda Gaki defensively. I don't want to be one of those people, Nick, that necessarily says, well, until they do it, they'll beat me, and I'll, you know, why? What kind of stupidity is that? I mean, if the horse happens to run well and win, and the rest of your opinions were in line, you can benefit. And if he runs, you know, well and doesn't win and is involved in the exotics, why would you cost yourself with sort of an anti stance? There's not a definitive way to evaluate him.
Right. There's also, I mean, there's a huge difference between using formulator stats that pertain to a trainer and applying some, you know, ancient standard to a given race that, well, I'm not going to use that horse because nobody's done that. You know, everybody said that before Animal Kingdom, and everybody said that before Justify, and everybody said that before Funny Side. It's only a trend until it ends. Right. After that, it's an artifact. And so there's no point in that. Now, if you are, again, if we're talking about what you perceive to be value and you think that he's going to be an underlay, then don't bet him. It's very simple. And for all intents and purposes, I think regardless of how you feel about him, given the what he faces in terms of these obstacles and so on and so forth, he's likely to be an underlay. Right. I mean, we don't know what a fair price on an international based runner who's being asked to do this in a short period of time really is. We think it's probably better than 8-1. Right. So then, you know, at that point, if you think that it's just too onerous to take that type of price on him, then move on. There's nothing stopping you, and you should seek whatever value you can find, because this race generally offers more of it than any race you're going to find across the country. So there's a lot to be said for that. And yeah, my concern is that I don't want to gravitate to him and say, oh, well, they're winning everywhere anyway, so why, you know, why worry? It's like, yeah, the Japanese based runners have done extremely well on an international stage. Undoubtedly, it's because they have put in part of their program to do well in these races and with these opportunities. And this is a multiple decade long endeavor that's really panning out now. So I think he's very dangerous. I think the mistake to be made with him are sort of what you and I laid out. And you just have to figure out in your own opinion and with what you think are true odds, whether he's in that sweet spot.
Well, well framed. Where are you on the Oaks?
So, you know, I mean, unfortunately, I think that the Brad Cox horses look like they're gonna probably dominate this race on the racetrack. The horse that I've been intrigued by since the Fairgrounds Oaks was the Alice Look, because I believe the inside was very, very strong on Louisiana Derby Day, and she was every bit of 3-4 wide the whole way around the track. So I wanted to try and bet her back, and I felt like she did very well heads up in a workout with Warpaint, and Warpaint is a filly who has always trained well. So I kind of like her. I will say that I thought Botanical's workout yesterday looked very good. I have no problem with her. And then, of course, you have Wet Paint, who is just simply a deserving, pretty heavy favorite at this point. So I don't have a particularly clever opinion at this point. I was going to look at the race a little bit more over the weekend and see if I can find something to kind of dig out. But it looks relatively mundane to me, Steve. And I wish that there was a way that Punch Bowl and Julia Shining were in it, because it looked like it would be a much more interesting race.
It's a very strange scenario. I don't know if you heard my, who did I say that to the other day, what the odds might be that one of those AEs from the Oaks ends up as the three-year-old filly champion?
Not that long, right? That seems like a distinct possibility. It is, I mean, you know, it's one of those where Churchill, I'm sure, will sit down and obviously they're good stewards of the Derby for sure and the Oaks and figure out. It feels to me, and with all due respect to Sunderland, this is not me saying anything negative about them, but it feels like when you look at the Sunderland Park Oaks winner and then you look at the Ashland runner-up and one is basically guaranteed to get into the field and the other isn't, it's not necessarily what you want. However, they set up the point system so that you were incentivized to run as much as possible. And Brad Cox knew what he was doing running Punch Bowl with essentially one opportunity to get in, and she didn't win. So, you know, there's plenty of argument on both sides. But, yeah, it feels like she could easily end up being the best of this lot. Same with Julia Shining, who's likely to get better with experience given that family. And I'll tell you what it's really shaping up as is an incredible opportunity for the Acorn on the Belmont undercard, or actually on the Belmont Eve undercard now.
That's right. All right, let's get a glance at tomorrow's cross country aqueduct, pair at Aqueduct, and then three straight at Oaklawn.
Yeah, the sixth at Aqueduct is the first in the sequence, and it's a turf sprint with what looks like a pretty solid field on paper. I was a little intrigued by the four, Starry Starry Night, who's now in Michelle Hemingway's care. This horse ran some good races sprinting on the turf last year for John Kimmel and looks to be training forwardly. Michelle Hemingway in limited opportunities last year actually did pretty well in New York, all things considered. So the horse to beat is My Sea Cottage by a mile. Irad is on board for Mark Cassie, cutting back to a sprint. I don't necessarily love cutbacks on the turf, but this one's very speedy, and so there's plenty of reason to think that he can be forward. I thought the way you approach it would be to kind of see if you could beat the favorite My Sea Cottage a little bit with Starry Starry Night, but I don't think you want to go too hog wild there trying to beat the favorite, because pace-wise, it does look like he's in a really advantageous spot. The other race at Aqueduct is this two other then that I don't think a lot of the people that entered it expected to see Zandon, and he's in here coming back off a layoff. Obviously, Lasix for the first time. This is his first time in anything but a maiden special weight race or a stake race, and just a shrewd placement, I would say, by Chad, looking for an opportunity to get Zandon back, you know, with a little bit of confidence. I mean, I'm not going to mince words. I thought his Cigar Mile performance was woeful. It was, I understand there was very little pace in there, but he didn't cut into the margin but behind those horses at all. And so maybe he didn't love the wet track. Maybe he was just a little over the top after a relatively long seven race campaign. And so now he gets a new opportunity off the bench. So I'd be willing to admit that he's a deserving heavy favorite in here. I don't think that really High Connection or Galls are quite good enough, and a lot of these other horses are sort of the I don't want to call them the over-raced, but they're this time of year, you know, you get these horses that have been running and claiming races all winter. They've really been through the ringer. So I don't know if all of them are going to be necessarily quite as ready to stand up to a horse like Zandon, but good to have him back and good to see him in a race, but really where he's supposed to win in an effort to kind of get that going. And then it leads into those three Oaklawn races, which look like they're all very deep and competitive, including a one other then to kick it off, where a tape-to-tape is going to be a pretty heavy favor for Larry Ravelli. He's got plenty of speed, but he doesn't always have all the stick that you need. I thought Willow Creek Road, I understand he's an Arkansas bred, but two back, his sprint race was very good. It's actually just about as fast as Tape to Tape's best records, the best races, rather. I wonder if he could maybe contend for a little bit, and he's going to be a relatively decent price as well. Under the Gun came back from a poor effort at Sam Houston to win going away. That was a much weaker field, though. I have to admit, it was not impressive. And then you have Favorite Outlaw, who looks like a deserving participant on the outside, beaten by Go West last out, who might just be stakes caliber at some point down the line. So it felt relatively chalky to me. I thought maybe the interesting horse that you could throw in there was Willow Creek Road in that first of the three at Oaklawn.
Willow Creek Road, 12-1, putting blinkers on for Mac Robertson. It's never a bad idea to look twice at Mac Robertson horses. Tape to Tape, 2-1, and you mentioned the ever dangerous Chris Hartman participant toward the outside as well. Favorite Outlaw, 9-5. You know, there's another 12-1 that's cutting back here. That I another Arkansas bred, Bandit Point. Who's you know, kept actually, he's kept nice company, including trying the no double against Garhol, and was only beaten two and change. Veteran 8 year old, maybe not a win candidate, but Bandit Point on the turn back, I think, could maybe boost your, if you're playing the try and super. I think you want Bandit Point underneath.
Never going to get me arguing with a cutback, Steve. I agree. I think he'll be going in the right direction late. So that's, I totally agree.
That gets you to the Dig a Diamond, and they're digging for stake names, I'll tell you that. although you can go to, right, you can go to the natural, to that park, and you, and people do dig for diamonds. It's a whole thing. And occasionally you see a news story out of Arkansas where somebody finds like a substantial, you know, valuable diamond at the mining site.
Well, I was assuming they were going to do one on track. They did this at Sam Houston years ago, and maybe that coincides with the race. But yeah, there's got to be a horse that ran at Oaklawn at some point that's worthy of a stake being named after him rather than this. But let's hope that they are digging for diamonds. This has turned out to be an interesting little race and a lovely rides opportunity against weaker competition after trying to buy a Koa and the Azari for Robertino Diodoro. Looks like, you know, maybe not necessarily the main speed on paper. I don't think Let's Cruise is going to let her get too far away early. And Let's Cruise is plenty fast, but is coming back off a long layoff. Christian Torres could just end up taking Lovely Ride in hand and racing just off the pace. She's been successful in that position before. But, you know, the interesting horse on paper in here is Tap Dance Fever, now in the care of Brett Calhoun, coming over off of what you would assume is a private purchase after winning a handicap race on the undercard of the Tampa Bay Derby. And this mare's knocked heads with some solid competition. She beat Past the Champagne three starts ago at Tampa. She's really done her best work at Tampa over the years, but didn't run all that poorly two starts back in the Royal Delta at Gulfstream. So she's ideally suited to this race if those two end up fighting it out early, because I think that Isaac Castillo can just take her back and let her make one run. I thought that as far as, you know, maybe bigger prices go, I could warm up to Butterbean a little bit, who did get that race under her belt off the bench last time out. Now second off the layoff, there was no pace on that day at all, and I thought she finished up pretty well to be second. I know Traverse came back and underperformed in her next start, but I don't really think that matters all that much. So Tap Dance Fever mainly for me, with a little bit of Lovely Ride and Butterbean as alternatives. And the final leg of it is the Bachelor at 6 furlongs, which is the return of Mo Strike for Brad Cox, who's unseen since the Hopeful last year when he was beaten at 5-2 and ended up finishing fourth behind two subsequent Grade One winners, including a champion in Forte. What we saw from this son of Uncle Mo in his first couple of starts obviously looked very, very good. And if he's ready off the layoff, I think he'll be extremely tough for this field to beat. I'll tell you that he had a pretty favorable trip, all things considered, but I thought Release McCracken was a really nice winner last time out at the TTA race at Sam Houston. That was at 1:70. He's probably a little more suited to sprinting. When I talked to Brett Calhoun after, he was already mentioning cutting him back. And then you have Tyler's Tribe, who, you know, was a great story throughout his two-year-old season, but obviously had a situation in Kentucky where he bled and came back, and unfortunately he just does not look like the same horse. So we'll see if maybe he can get it back going. I think that Motor Strike's connections would be happy to let him go and then use him as a target. The other horse worth mentioning, of course, is Armin, who comes in off a game win last out against three-year-olds. Got a 93 buyer in there, so reason to believe that he can still move forward a little bit, too. So it's a good competitive way to end the sequence, no doubt about it. And I think just conceding the race to Mo Strike would be a mistake. A
couple of quick notes before we wrap up. And, you know, that Dig a Diamond exchange made me think about there's a jewelry store downtown in Hot Springs. And there's a charity ball that's a big deal in Hot Springs, and they put cubic zirconian diamonds in ice cubes and one real diamond, like one valuable diamond, and in people's drinks. It's and you have to, I guess I have to go at some point. I don't know how people melt, what do they let the ice melt, I guess, in their drink. And they fish out the cubic or the diamond, and then they go into the store and get it evaluated. It's a thing that's been going on. I can't remember. I can see the jewelry store but I can't remember the specifics, but it made me think of that. It's very funny.
That only in Hot Springs.
Hot Springs, it's a hot time in the old town. The first race is a mile and a 16th for 3-year-old fillies, and the three inside fillies that are involved here, lightly raced, two of them are making their second start, and one's making her third start. Penzig for John Ed Anthony and John Ortiz. This is a filly that's stretching out, a distorted humor out of the Congrats mare of Shortleaf, Richwood. That's a half to Jackman, who was an eight-time winner. Then there's Dixie Tap for West Point and Partners and Steve Asmussen. This is the Tappet out of Checkup from Zenekup, making this one a half to Caribbean Caper, the nice stake horse. And then finally, Asmussen has got the Three Chimneys homebred. The Gun Runner out of House of Dancing. This is Twirling Candy's sister.
Wow, I didn't realize all those pedigrees were in one place, but feels like the dam of the McPeak horse was okay, too. Or maybe she was productive courtesan. I don't remember. I could be thinking of a different horse. But
no,
yeah, there's some real pedigree power here.
That's a nice family. That's the Argentinian family. That Madame Stripes? Madame Stripes.
Yes.
Remember, she came as like a 4 or 5 year old to the U.S. and was okay. She won. I think she won a couple of stakes. No, there's.
Yeah. Madame Stripes. Exactly. She won the Megahertz and the Osinitas. So yeah, she was okay. She was also. So we also have to Tap the Gavel, who's a horse I was probably thinking of that ran more a little bit more recently, but yeah.
You know,
interesting.
I'll make one aside with you that, and partly because you brought up Zandon. But one thing that I have, and I'm trying to find my Keeneland notes from, was it today? Was it today's card? Have you? This is going to be a Chad Brown appreciation missive. If you have not noticed how many older horses that have been sold in bloodstock sales that are racing, it's a major tribute to Chad, the way Chad handles horses. You know what I'm talking about, Nick. Every week, there's seemingly another former Chad Brown horse that is, you know, that has been sold in November that is still racing at 5, 6, 7, 8. And I should start to catalog them because it's an epidemic of how great a job he's done that these horses are all still out there running and that, you know, people paid real money, you know, to move them into their barn.
Yeah, I totally agree. No, I think it has. Yeah, there's a lot to be said for it. Well, you know. It just goes to show you that people are willing to, you know, to spend and this and that. And there's a lot of comments and stuff made about horses moving from trainers or moving to trainers on social media and stuff like that. And like with everything else, most of it's wrong. So, there's something to be said for it as well. I'll give you a little nugget on the way out as well that I just think that people should have in the back of their mind. Since the Gulfstream Park Championship meet ended, Todd Pletcher is 5 for 58 with a 95-cent ROI. He's 0 for 22 at Aqueduct. He went 3 for 22 at Keeneland and 2 for 13 at Gulfstream. Those are not Todd-like numbers. So I'm not saying that it has anything to do with getting ready for the Derby or anything like that, but we know that's a barn that puts a big, big amount of attention on the winter slate at Gulfstream, and maybe the lemon got squeezed a little dry.
Very interesting, and it's not, I mean, it is not unusual given how much he wins down there during the winter, but well done. Nick Tamaro, everybody.
There
NTAM,
it is.
You bet. NTAM 1215. We will convene probably a couple of times next week. When are you coming?
I am not.
You're not, right. That's right.
Be,
you said
no,
you were.
I will
That's
not.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I will be celebrating Cinco de Mayo at Sam Houston, and then
that's right.
The 12 race quarter horse card on Derby Day.
Excellent. Well, that'll leave you some time between races to
it doesn't. 10:40 a.m. start, Steve. So I will have ample time.
I love it. And we owe our man a call. maybe I'll check in with you later. Maybe we'll give Eric a call.
Sounds good.
All right. Nick Tamorrow, everybody. We'll talk to Nick a couple of times next week as we get ready for, we usually do Thursday and Friday. Thursday for the Friday card and Friday for the Saturday card. Thanks, Nick.
Thank you, Steve. Have a good weekend.
Nick Tamorrow and Sam Houston's quarter horse beat rolling along, and you can bet on it. In fact, Trey Styles, you ride my pony. Trey, you should be looking at Trey's nightly plays. And I thought I saw, I don't know if that was tonight's or last night's. Hold on, let me take a look. And he said, he does Sharpie Time, S-H-R-P, Sharpie, get it? Yeah. Sharpie Time with Nick. Ride that pony. And he's going to be, was saying, if you stop by the studio, go say hello. We, of course, crafted the nickname Clubhouse Lawyer for Trey Styles. Hour one in the books. Let's take the break. Jay Privman joins us next. And, you know, just when you thought you had congratulated Jay on enough awards and honors, he picks up another one. These are like award emeritus now that he's winning. Jay joins us next. We'll do some Hall of Fame. If you haven't seen the really touching video that he did with Hubdy as they surprised Fernando Toro with his inclusion and his admission into the Hall of Fame, you should see it. It's really sweet. Jay Privman next. James Scully. Hour three, C.J. Milkowski and Hammer. It's been a frenetic enough week. I didn't have to shove in, 11 guests today. Let's take the break. We'll come right back to Churchill Downs, first week of coverage leading up to Derby Week. And technically Derby Week starts Sunday, but with all the works we're going to have tomorrow, really Derby Week kind of is going to start, I think, then. And Mike Welch is here. I'll see if we can't get a Welch visit in as well, because we didn't go through yesterday's Oaks works. And there was a bucket load that just one after the other. So if you missed parts of it, we understand. I retweeted most of KK's videos of yesterday's works. I think you may have seen most of them. And you can always watch the replay of the work show, the 7-8 show. Back after this, at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner and breeder.